Mr. Clement, good morning.
Morning. Morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Paul Clement for the Postal Service. I will endeavor to save 5 minutes for rebuttal. The Postal Regulatory Commission concluded in this case that the Great Recession and the associated unprecedented decline in postal volume were extraordinary or exceptional circumstances. They also concluded that the Postal Service faced dire financial straits and acknowledged that the exigency contributed to that financial position. Equally important, the Commission found that the service had done a, quote, commendable job of managing and reducing costs. Nonetheless, the Commission declined to grant the service an exigent rate increase of any amount. It did so only by adopting a fundamentally misguided construction of the statute that presents the statute's safety valve from providing meaningful relief. The statutory provision at issue creates a safety valve specifically to allow increases in extraordinary or exceptional circumstances. And the provision specifies the standard that the Commission must apply in judging those rate requests. Namely, they must be reasonable and equitable and necessary to ensure quality postal service under the best management practices. Now here, despite finding exceptional or extraordinary circumstances, the Commission rejected the rate request without ever even reaching that statutory standard, the reasonable and equitable and necessary standard. Instead, the Commission rejected the rate request at the threshold by applying the due-to requirement in the statute and interpreting that language to impose an offset or a nexus requirement. The parties differ a little bit at this point as to how strict it is, but in any event, they rejected the request at the threshold and said no rate request at all would be granted.
Well, you say that, rejection at the threshold, in other words, focusing on due-to, I assume that you're saying they take a plain meaning view of the statute and view it as unambiguous, correct?
That's clearly how the order reads, Your Honor. So I think this is a case where even if the court thought there was some ambiguity in that phrase due to that would allow the commission to impose some kind of requirement, I still think it would require a remand because this was not a step two case the way the agency decided it. They held essentially that this nexus test was compelled by the phrase due to.
Well, that partly is my question because if all we're going to get is a remand here, wouldn't you have been better off simply filing your request again?
Well, I don't think so, Judge Brown, and there's a couple of reasons for that. One is I do think it matters whether or not the due-to requirement is the source of a nexus test or the reasonable and equitable and necessary requirement is the source of a nexus test. We don't quibble with the notion that at some level you couldn't go in with a minor exigency and justify a huge increase in rates. We think that requirement, if there is, is a loose requirement, and it's vested, if it's vested anywhere in the statute, in the reasonable and equitable and necessary language. I think if it were found in that part of the statute, there would be a couple of consequences. One is that the natural consequence, if the commission thought that the rate request was a little bit too high for the exigent circumstances, that they wouldn't reject the request at the threshold and give the service zero, but might trim the request. And again,
so in your view, then, if they had gone to the second provision, they would have had authority to give a rate increase less than what was requested?
I think they would have had authority to do that. Now, we still think that the full 5.6% request would have been justified if they'd reached that standard, and we'd be happy to have a chance to articulate that. Another virtue of a remand, I think, Your Honor, is that there is essentially pervading the entire commission opinion, there is this sense that the service is being faulted for its candor in telling the commission from the outset that this exigent rate increase was not a complete solution to all of their problems. Now, normally you would expect that kind of candor to be rewarded, but here it seems like it was punished. And the commission essentially said, I think in their view, the congressional requirement that the service pre-fund retirement benefits was the proverbial 800-pound gorilla in the room, that that's what was really causing the problem. But then the commission used that 800-pound gorilla as an excuse not to address the 400-pound gorilla, which is the exigency and the precipitous drop in volume. And that seems to me to be fundamentally misguided. Just because the service faces bigger problems that only Congress can solve isn't a justification for the commission not to use the authority that Congress has plainly given it to address exigent circumstances, which they found in a case like this. And so I think a remand, if the court, I think, in reviewing the commission's opinion, could clarify that as well, I think the service would be in a much better position to refile a request at this stage than they would have been if they simply had refiled immediately after the opinion came down.
Let me ask you about the 800-pound gorilla. Do you think that is an exigent circumstance?
I don't think the 800-pound gorilla is the exigent circumstance. I think it might have been theoretically possible for the service to come in and conceive of the upcoming liquidity crisis as the exigent circumstance. And that liquidity crisis is produced by a variety of factors, including the pre-funding requirement. But instead, they focused on the drop in volume as being the exigent circumstance that they identified and tried to address that.
I want to ask you about the three circumstances that I think are isolated. You don't think the $5 billion a year contribution to the health benefits is an exigent circumstance?
We haven't identified it as such, and I think it would be a little bit tricky for the service to identify a congressionally imposed requirement as an exigent circumstance.
I agree. All right, then you have the drop in mail volume. Forget the recession for a minute. And what is your position on whether that's an exigent circumstance?
That is the exigent circumstance that the service originally identified in its filing.
And why is it an exigent or emergency as opposed to just an evolving advance in technology? I mean,
I think that's an important question, Your Honor, and I think that everybody understood that in the long run, electronic diversion of postal volumes was a problem. But nobody thought that there would be these kind of precipitous declines in postal volume in the short run, the way there were associated with the recession.
Okay, and brought on by the recession. Okay, because here's my ultimate question, that is, didn't the Rate Commission say to you, if you can break out what is caused by what you identify as the exigent circumstance, and I hear you saying the recession coupled with the precipitous drop in mail volume, why you didn't take them up on that?
Well, two responses, Your Honor. First, would that it were so that they would have given us the opportunity to respond to that. And if you look at the process that's developed here by the Commission, this is an iterative process. And the Commission's own regulations are set up that way. They specifically provide for supplemental requests for information. They require the service to identify somebody to respond to every single element of the request that's initially submitted. And here the service identified Mr. Corbett as the person specifically responsible for addressing the relationship between the rates and the sort of nature of the exigency. And there was no follow-up on this specific issue. And it really is stark. Because if you look at the joint appendix between pages 89 and 144, you will see 106 follow-up questions that were addressed by the Commission to the service about all level of minutia. I mean, we're talking about the details of the calculation of the Alaska bypass volume. So they were down in the weeds on everything, and they never said, oh, by the way, when we look at your numbers as to this rate increase and the fact that it would contribute $5 billion, we have some concerns about your numbers in calculating that. I mean, if they had had that kind of iterative process, I think we wouldn't be here because we could have satisfied them. If their concern was that, well, the $5 billion in contributions is explained by the 14.1% average contribution of every piece of mail, but the reduction in volume was not distributed evenly across classes of mail, which is something they pointed out in their opinion, we never heard about that during the iterative process. None of those 106 questions focused on that. So at the end of this process, all of a sudden, we were told, well, wait, according to now the Commission's position in their brief, we didn't even satisfy a rudimentary relationship. And with all due respect, I just don't think that explains what happened below. What happened below is we put in a request. If you look at page 22 of the Joint Appendix, we quote the statute in our initial request. We identify that we understand there are two requirements in the statute: extraordinary exceptional circumstances, and reasonable and equitable and necessary. Now, at no point are we told, well, actually, we think there are three, and there's this due-to test, and it is either strict or not so strict of an offset requirement. We're never told any of that. And the other problem, of course, with going right back to the Commission is even to page 40 of their brief now, they're not willing to tell us precisely what level of relationship they demand. So one of the things we hope will emerge from this...
Isn't that because the commission's view is that they rejected any efforts the Postal Service made to quantify it? In other words, they said there's no reason for us to do that because the Postal Service hasn't shown us in any quantifiable way that it's due to these to the recession. It never got to that question.
Well, Your Honor, I understand that, but now the issue's been joined in this court, and they've faulted us for failing to satisfy a due-to requirement that we don't even think is properly justified in the statute.
Let's talk about that for a minute. I'm curious about your construction of the statute. You said in your brief, and you just said now, that you know that the Postal Service, the Commission's putting too much weight on due-to, right?
Absolutely.
That it's in a procedural section. But so is either extraordinary or exceptional circumstances. That's in the same clause. And you agree that that's a substantive requirement, right? Do you agree with that?
Well, I'm not sure the service would ultimately, I think the service might quibble with that, but I don't take issue with it for purposes of this argument. And if I could explain, I think there's a difference between the two that I think is critical, which is that the extraordinary or exceptional circumstances language doesn't crowd out any other language in the statute. And what I think is pernicious about interpreting a nexus requirement from the due-to language that doesn't apply at all to the exceptional or extraordinary circumstances language is that that language, their interpretation of due-to, is clearly crowding out the role that the substantive standard that Congress specified is supposed to do, the reasonable and equitable and necessary test.
Well, we have to start with the language of the statute. And it says due-to extraordinary or exceptional circumstances.
It does, Your Honor,
We can't ignore the words due to.
Right, but this isn't a case where if you don't side with the commission, the words due to aren't going to do any work in the statute. They've clearly done their work. The commission has promulgated rules in order to facilitate this request. And those rules, by the way, don't have anything.
Let me see if I understand. So suppose there was an earthquake that destroyed a major postal commission facility. Okay, and it costs $100 million to repair it. And we all agree that that's extraordinary and exceptional, okay? Could the Postal Service ask for a $500 million rate increase over a couple of years?
No, I don't think they could, Judge Tatel, and I think that would be because of the language reasonable and equitable and necessary. Uh-huh. I do think that perhaps the commission could get $150 million. I don't think that there is sort of either a break-even or an offset requirement. I think it's a looser nexus requirement than that. And I think it's located in the reasonable and equitable and necessary standard. Interestingly, I'm not the only person that thinks that the reasonable and equitable and necessary language could support some kind of nexus test. The commission itself recognized that at Joint Appendix 202. And instead of recognizing, well, okay, if there's another provision in the statute, the Congress...
Okay, excuse me.
Sure.
I just want to make sure I understood your answer to my question. You agree, then, that the rate request, right, has to, in fact, be due to the extraordinary or exceptional circumstance, right?
I'm not sure I would agree to that, Your Honor, which is to say, I mean, it's sort of a metaphysical question.
What role does it play in the statute? I don't understand.
I don't think it has a role to play in the statute other than being a direction to the commission to promulgate regulations.
Why isn't that the same of extraordinary and exceptional?
Well, first of all,
it's in the same phrase.
I think it could be interpreted that way, and of course, the commission.
So then under your theory, the commission could read this as allowing fair and equitable rates, regardless of whether they're related to an extraordinary or exceptional circumstance.
I don't think it could, Your Honor. I think that would fail at step two of Chevron.
Well, why wouldn't it fail at step one?
Because I do think the way I think the statute was envisioned by Congress is that there's a direction to promulgate rules and regulations that can address a number of things, including the regulations are perfectly free to impose a threshold requirement that you have to show extraordinary or exceptional circumstances. Okay. The regulations
but not due to them, right?
The regulations are free to have some language that is related to due to. That's how you promulgate regulations. And there is a regulation that requires a showing of some kind of relationship. We fully believe we satisfied that. And although the commission invoked that regulation, that's not why we were told we lost this case. We were told we lost this case because of the statute.
Suppose I didn't agree with you about due to. Okay, suppose I thought that that the statute required that the rate, that the funds produced by the rate be due to the extraordinary circumstances, okay? Let's just assume I think that. The commission says in its opinion, it says, speaking of the Corbett
right.
affidavit, it says this appears to be the only Postal Service's attempt to quantify the financial impact of the exigent circumstance. You agree with that?
I agree that the commission said that. There certainly was additional submissions that would support what Mr. Corbett said. But as I said earlier, the regulations require the service to denominate a particular witness to respond to every regulatory requirement. And Mr. Corbett was the witness that was specified
right.
to be responsive to this requirement.
And the reason I ask about that is that the commission found his testimony not plausible because of two errors. And I don't see you challenging those errors here.
Well, if
challenging the commission's view that those were, that his calculations were erroneous. And the reason I ask that based on my assumption that, you know, there has to be a relationship between due to has meaning in the statute, then if I'm right about interpreting the opinion this way, then there is no evidence from the Postal Service at all quantifying the relationship between the extraordinary circumstance, right? There's nothing.
Oh, well, I have to disagree, Your Honor, because there
well,
is the evidence from Corbett.
Well, but I just asked you. The Postal Service, the Postal Commission, found his analysis flawed with a fundamental error that you don't challenge.
I disagree. And we do take issue with that because can I address the two things that the commission identified two errors
right.
with that testimony.
Right.
One, we absolutely do challenge, which is they say.
You do challenge the one about the temporal issue, and I actually agree with you about that. But what about the other one?
Well, maybe we're identifying the errors differently. What do you identify as the second thing they took issue with?
The length of the extraordinary the length of the recession.
The length of the recession?
The one you deal with in, I think it's footnote 3 in your reply brief.
Well, and on the length of the recession, I guess the only thing we would say is that that doesn't seem in any way to be a reason to reject this ab initio, to reject the whole request. If they thought it was too long, if they wanted to phase it out, we essentially volunteered in our submission, again, because the regulations require us to say something about the temporal length of the adjustment.
Okay. But I agree with you about that one. But what about the other one? And this is what it is. Okay. For Corbett to get to his $5 billion, what they did was they multiplied the average contribution per piece times the total volume decline, right? That's what they did.
Right.
Okay, and the commission said the problem with that is that the total volume decline is made up of classes that have different volume declines with different average contributions. In other words, what the commission's saying here is that what the Postal Service did was an average, not a weighted average. And you don't respond to that. So from our perspective here, reviewing the decision of an administrative agency, that's a fact finding that's binding on us, namely that the only piece of evidence that the commission thought related these two things is flawed.
Well, but Your Honor,
there's
we don't.
Nothing in the record then.
Your Honor, we do take issue with that as a matter of process.
Where?
Roman 2 of our opening and reply briefs, our whole point here is that on the notice and the way that this did not proceed the way that it was supposed to, mm-hmm. is that we weren't given an opportunity to respond to that. And I think if you look at Joint Appendix pages 89 to 144 and see the level of detail.
Mr. Brown said you could have just filed another a rate request at that
point. Well, as I said, we really couldn't file another rate request because we weren't given an adequate target to shoot for. If we filed another rate request, we'd be dealing with this ridiculous submission by the commission that the recession is over, which in our very first submission, we told the commission that if you look at past experience with recessions, the effect on mail volume does not match up directly to the length of the recession the way that an economist would tell you. And I think common sense reinforces that. We all know that the job market doesn't snap back as soon as some economist has said that the recession is over. But that also was part of the reasoning of the commission. So I, with all respect, Your Honor, I think if we would have refiled and simply said, all right, we've looked at the weight, we've given you a weighted average, we would still have had it rejected for multiple reasons, including that the recession was over, including that our real concerns had to do with the 800-pound gorilla. And so that's why we're in this court. If this court wants to issue an opinion that says that if we provide a weighted average, we're home free, we'd be very, very welcoming of that. But I would I think
why would we do that? You've given us no basis for reaching any conclusion on that subject since it's unchallenged.
It is challenged on procedural grounds, Your Honor, and fundamentally, there's a complete disconnect. If you look at the level of specificity of the questions, the 106 questions we were asked, not one of them says, Mr. Corbett, what about a weighted average? Why, can you give us a weighted average? Of course we could have given him a weighted average, but we weren't given that opportunity. And did we challenge that? You bet we challenged that. Every word of our briefs dealing with the procedural error and the lack of notice goes precisely to this issue. This is precisely the kind of thing that if we would have known that there was a nexus requirement, if we would have known...
Well, but if the statute's clear, then you have the notice from the statute.
How can the statute be clear, Your Honor, when at this late stage they won't tell us the precise level of relationship?
All you have to do is, that's a different question. Let me try this on you. There's potentially two ambiguities in this language. Due to could mean either that the requested rate has to be due to the extraordinary circumstance, right? That is causally connected to it. That's one possible question. Or another question might be, all right, it does have to be due to it, but what do we mean by that? What level of proof is needed to show it? Those are two different questions. The statute could be very clear on the former and ambiguous on the latter.
I suppose, Your Honor, I don't think that it's clear on the former. But even as we argued in the alternative in our briefs.
The reason you and I got into this is if it is clear on the former, then the Postal Service has notice from the statute.
I disagree, Your Honor.
Right.
And as we said,
right.
I mean, the second argument in our briefs was an argument in the alternative about insufficient notice, even if there is a due to requirement in the statute. And surely if a request for an expedited rate increase is going to fail or stand or succeed based on whether there's a weighted average, you have to tell the service that. If I could reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal, unless there are further questions.
Okay. All right. We'll give a couple of minutes. All right, Mr. Tenney.
May it please the court. Excuse me. Counsel agrees, as we just heard, that there is a nexus requirement in the statute. Even though there seems to be some uncertainty about how precise the Postal Service's submission has to be, the problem here is that the Postal Service didn't make any submission at all quantifying the effect of the recession on their revenues. And I don't understand that to be disputed. The only number we've been talking about is a $5 billion figure, which estimated their total volume decline from a period beginning in 2006 before the recession began, which appears in a footnote of their submission that's talking about how the volume decline was so big that the Postal Service must have been reasonable and had good management practices. The Postal Service has not made an attempt until there's a belated attempt in the reply brief, which has several flaws with it as well, to estimate the effect of the recession on their finances. What is clear from the record, though, is what the Postal Service is asking for. The Postal Service is asking for a rate increase that would increase prices by $3 billion per year. They expect that if they added that up, they said over the next decade, we expect to get $30 billion in additional revenues. And that's at the supplemental appendix, page 177. Their witness testified that you have to consider this as it's going to shore up our revenues to the tune of $30 billion over the next decade. They have made no submission suggesting that the effects of the recession on the Postal Service are near that much. You know, the most they've done is in the reply brief, they've said it's $2.5 billion based on, without addressing, as was pointed out earlier, some of the comments that the commission made of flaws in their analysis.
Is Judge Tatel correct? If they had submitted a weighted average, would that have solved the problem? Or is that not the only problem?
I mean, if they had submitted a weighted average, then that would at least give the commission something to compare to. If they had said, here is our estimate of what the effect of the recession was on our finances, and here is how we're going to address it, then you could compare it and you could begin to, the commission could begin to assess whether what they were asking for had the required relatedness to what happened to them. But that's not what they did. What they said was, you know, we've got this exigent circumstance. We're not going to estimate the effect that it had as opposed to other factors on our finances. And we're going to use it as an opportunity to address other issues and evade the price cap. And they made that very clear, as we pointed out in our brief. They said it's an opportunity to improve cost coverage and an opportunity to address other issues that were simply not a problem with the rate request. I'd just like to turn because there's some acknowledgement today, as I understand it, that if the amount of revenue that they're seeking is way out of line with the impact of the recession on them, that would be inappropriate. But their requested remedy is for the commission to somehow trim the request. That makes it sound like the request is sort of a number that you can sort of change a little bit. I mean, this request, as counsel pointed out himself, involves a lot of moving pieces. The Postal Service, I mean, to their credit, the Postal Service evaluated the effects of the interaction between prices, how changes in prices would affect the markets, and that was the subject of extensive proceedings before the commission in this 90-day abbreviated proceeding. And to suggest that the commission at the end of the day should say, well, the request that you submitted was not exactly the right request, but here's how we're going to fix it, is not the way this process works.
What's your answer to Mr. Clemens' argument that they really just had no idea during this process? They got these 106 questions, but they didn't even focus on this Corbett stuff, and they just didn't know what the Postal Commission wanted.
Well, I mean, they've now conceded that there is a nexus requirement, and they didn't satisfy it because they didn't make any attempt to demonstrate it. And it was also pointed out to them by other parties other than the commission. You know, the public representative, which is cited in our brief, said, here's the problem with your request. You don't tie it sufficiently to what happened to you due to the recession. And they gave a response that suggested that they don't think that that's their burden, and that's their position. I mean, I would also add that there's no requirement that the agency, especially in an abbreviated proceeding that's only supposed to take place in 90 days, forecast ahead of time how it's going to resolve the issues. I mean, the Postal Service submitted a request which was deficient in this area. The commission analyzed it. The questions that counsel was referring to, were some of them were by the commission, some of them were channeled through the commission because many other parties had questions. The commission had an open proceeding where it let people submit questions to the commission, many of which were in the form of clarifications or corrections to the things that the Postal Service did submit. There's no source, I don't know what the source of any requirement that in a 90-day proceeding the commission has to say, well, here's the deficiency in your request if you want to try to fix it, especially since, as we know, what they were requesting was out of line with the effect of the recession on them.
Can I go back to a threshold question here? Mr. Clement says that if that phrase is ambiguous, we have to remand. Do you agree with that?
I find the question of whether that phrase is ambiguous to be a difficult one. You have to read the statute as a whole, as the commission did. And the commission, in addition to reading the statute as a whole, also looked at its regulations, which do speak to this point. The regulations say that you have to show how the specific increases requested relate to the extraordinary circumstances.
But the commission thought it was interpreting the plain language of the statute, didn't it?
It did.
It didn't think it was exercising any delegated authority to interpret it, did it?
except to the extent that it referred to its own regulations, which plainly would be under that authority, and the regulations are referenced at, for well, example, JA 207.
But the question, though, is, and this is, to maybe just ask Judge Brown's question slightly differently. If we thought that the commission had decided this case based on its understanding of the plain language of the statute, and if we thought the statute was ambiguous, we'd have to remand it, right?
If you thought both of those things and you thought it was ambiguous in a way that would possibly lead to this request should have been granted, but I think given that everybody now seems to agree that there is a nexus requirement and given the paucity of the Postal Service's showing of the effect on it and the large request that they've made, the problem is that there may be some ambiguity in the statute somewhere, but as applied to this case, and when the commission certainly brought its expertise to bear on how to apply the statute to this case, and
so would I be right in saying, okay, so what you might have said, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what you might have said is, well, the ambiguity in the statute is on how tight the connection has to be. That is exactly what has to be shown to make the causal connection that everybody agrees here. That's the ambiguity.
If there's an ambiguity, it goes to that rather than...
Now, do you understand the commission to have said anything about what that means, about its view of that subject? I mean, as to whether it's, you know, has to be a tight showing, you know, if there's $100 million exigent circumstances, then the rate increase has to yield $100 million, or on the other hand, you know, the commission recognizes that this is difficult and it's hard to calculate these things, and a certain amount of level of estimation and approximation will be tolerated because it's not an exact science. Has the commission said anything about that?
I don't think the commission has resolved that issue because the request didn't present it.
Right.
Unless there are any further questions.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, why don't you take 2 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate the 2 minutes. First of all, let me be clear about what we concede. We don't concede that there is a nexus requirement in the statute.
You might say that when you stood up.
We concede that the reasonable and equitable and necessary language could be construed under Step 2 of Chevron to have a nexus requirement. It hasn't been done yet, and there's no ambiguity, to use a word, in the commission's decision as to what they based their decision on. If you look at page 27 of their opinion, that's in the joint appendix, page 174, they state flatly that the plain meaning of the statute, the plain language of the statute, is the basis for the commission's decision. So that alone requires a remand. If I could make 2 other brief points. First of all, on this notion that this whole thing came apart based on the failure to provide a weighted average, if that's what happened, then the way the commission proceeded is the height of arbitrary and capriciousness. Not only were there 106 questions, but there are 125 pages of transcript from Mr. Corbett's testimony before the commission. They asked him all manner of questions. Not one of those questions went to whether or not there was a weighted average or not a weighted average. I mean, and especially in the context of a expedited proceeding to deal with exigent circumstances, the agency should not be playing hide the ball on the service if that's the nature of their provision, the position. The last thing I'll say is this is something, it's a minor point, but I think it's important. The council said it at the podium, and they also said it in their brief. They complained that somehow the service was up to other things than dealing with the exigency because they used this as an opportunity, for example, to figure out whether certain classes of mail had appropriate cost coverage. But that's actually part of the problem here, which is that's a perfectly appropriate thing for the service to get into in showing that the rate increases it requests are reasonable and equitable and necessary. Reasonable and equitable go to the equity of the rate increases across rate payers. If there's one class of mail that isn't covering its cost, that's a perfectly appropriate thing for them to get into. So this is another instance in which the service was essentially faulted for addressing the items that the statute actually addresses, reasonable and equitable and necessary, based on this due-to requirement that really isn't in the statute, certainly not at step one. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Thank you.